All right. Okay. Welcome back, everyone. So let us carry on. And we are looking at the Chuladukka Kanda Sutta on all the heap of suffering in the world. And we have just been looking at the idea that unless you attain some kind of samadhi, some kind of jhana, which is apart from sensual pleasures, beyond sensual pleasures, the mind will incline towards it. Yeah, this is kind of the main ideas here. This is what the Buddha has been saying. And now because all of these suttas are about Buddha's own life, now we will find the Buddha talking about his past experience with this. Yeah. So now we're moving on to the Buddha talking about himself. And then it says again, as usual, before my awakening here, when I was still unawakened but intent on awakening here, I too clearly saw with right wisdom that sensual pleasures give little gratification and much suffering here and distress, and they are all the more full of drawbacks. Yes, you see, he has seen this clearly. But so long as I didn't achieve the rapture and bliss that are apart from sensual pleasures and unskillful qualities, or something even more peaceful than that, I didn't announce that I would not return to sensual pleasures. As long as you haven't gone beyond sensual pleasures, you cannot announce you will not return to them. Kind of makes sense. You need to go beyond, you need to find something superior. Then you can say, I will not go back to these things. But when I did achieve that rapture and bliss, or something more peaceful than that, I announced that I would not return to sensual pleasures. And again, the rapture and bliss that is talked about here is the bliss of jhana. Yeah, it's because it uses the word kame, anyatra kame, apart from karma, apart from unskillful qualities, it's exactly the same phrasing that you find in the first jhanas. So that's how you know that he's talking about the jhanas right there. That's when he could make that announcement. And what is the gratification of sensual pleasures? Now we're going to look at sensual pleasure in terms of this threefold scheme that we talk about. Yeah, gratification, asada. You see the word asada down there? This is the gratification, in other words, the pleasure or the happiness and things. And then we're going to look at the adinava, which is the drawback or the downside. And then once you kind of weigh these things up, you look at the good part, the bad part, you weigh them up, and if the bad part is bad, then you go for the nisarana, which is kind of relinquishment, yeah, the giving up, the liberation from those sensual pleasures. So this is what we're going to see now. But before we see that, I'm going to indulge in a bit of sensual pleasure. I'm a hypocrite, right? This is hypocritical monks, really. Oh.
Ajay, we enter the hall of the sensual pleasures, it says.
The hall of the sensual pleasures?
The hall of sensual pleasures.
What are you talking about?
So that we can get gratified there.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I think you. Yeah, okay, maybe.
You will notice here that the way it is phrased, it says, Kocha Mahanama, yeah? Kamanang, you see the word kamanang over there? That is another plural. The anang ending is a plural ending. And so what we're talking about here is we're talking about the gratification or the pleasure of the five senses, the five sense world. Whenever karma is in the plural, it refers again to the five senses. So what is the gratification of the five senses, you could argue, is perhaps some clearer translation of what is going on here. So what is that, right? So let's have a quick look at that. It's fairly straightforward. There are these five kinds of sensual stimulation, yeah, kamaguna. In other words, the five kinds of senses. What five? sights known by the eye that are likable, desirable, agreeable, pleasant, sensual, and arousing. Yeah. Sounds known by the ear, smells known by the nose, tastes known by the tongue, touches known by the body, but are likable, desirable, agreeable, pleasant, sensual, and arousing. Yeah. These are the five kinds of sensual stimulation. Yeah, the five senses, that's basically what it is. You can see it right there. So this is what I was saying before. In the plural, it refers to the five senses. The pleasure and happiness that arises from these five kinds of sensual stimulation, this is the gratification of sensual pleasures. Yeah, so very straightforward, very easy. Whatever happiness comes through the five senses, that is called the pleasure, the gratification, in case of the five senses. So we all know what that is. We don't really have to, you know, to kind of go in detail. It's a very varied and very large field. There's a lot of kind of happinesses in that realm. And some of those happinesses are very kind of coarse and very agitating. They have a lot to do with craving. But some of the pleasures that come through the five senses are actually can be useful to lead you in the right direction. I think it's important to remember that the five senses are not all bad. Yeah, it depends on how we think about them. So the way to deal with the five senses is to start off with kind of giving up the things that are really, that leads to all kind of immorality. Yeah, that leads to problems. That is the first thing. So keep the five precepts. By keeping the five precepts, you're already getting rid of the things that are the worst problems with the five senses. This is kind of the first kind of initial thing here. The other thing to remember is that sensual stimulation in the world, often you get very agitated, very restless by the five senses. Yeah, sometimes the craving can be very strong. Sometimes just being in the world just makes you agitated because you have to run around and do things all the time. So we can use the five senses and use the happiness that comes to that also for calming down. Yeah, so we kind of use, we understand the varying degrees to which these five senses are involves us with craving and attachments. So when, for example, you have had a long day at work or a long day with whatever and you feel tired or whatever, you can use a refined kind of sensual stimulation to calm down. You can listen to some chanting. You can listen to some calming music. Don't listen to heavy metal music. That's going to be not so good. Yeah, techno, not so good. Techno is too exciting. Some calming kind of music. And you listen to something calm. It calms you. Have a nice cup of tea. Yeah, have a nice cup of coffee. Yeah, that's what I recommend. Sit in your favorite chair just to relax. This is actually sensual stimulation, but it's a refined kind of sensual stimulation. It doesn't take you too far away, and it kind of helps you to calm down, get rid of most of the restlessness of the mind. So we use the world of the five senses in a good way to kind of lead you in the right direction, right? And it's fascinating. This also happens for the monastics. You know, one of the things that monastics are allowed to enjoy and to kind of delight in is nature. You see this in the Theragata, Therigata, the ancient scriptures of the monastics. They would go off into the forest and they would say, wow, these mountains are so beautiful. Look at the beautiful forest. Look at the peacocks. You know the peacocks, right? Beautiful birds. And look at the kind of the eagles soaring above, on the current. And they would actually admire nature and admire these things. And the reason is because nature doesn't really lead to a lot of attachment. When you are in nature, you are just there, but you don't really feel very attached to it. But it does calm you down, because it is away from the sensual stimulations of the world. So the idea here is to understand the various types of five sense experience and move towards something more refined. You can do this in your daily life. When you're tired, instead of coming back home and trying to meditate straight away, calm down gradually, because you cannot make these quantum leaps, go from being agitated, bang, straight to being peaceful. It doesn't work like that. The mind is gradual. The mind gradually calms down. It doesn't do quantum leaps. Only quantum mechanics does quantum leaps. And this is not about quantum mechanics, this is about something else. So that is the right way, yeah? And then you kind of gradually move in the right direction. Huh? This is a good way to thinking about central place. It's not all bad. It kind of varies enormously. Huh? So then you start to deal with these things in a kind of a useful way. So there's all kinds of different kinds of pleasure. Hey, go for the more refined pleasures if you can, because they are more conducive for the spiritual practice. So. Okay, so now we have seen the pleasure or the gratification in the five senses. Now we're going to look at the downside, the drawback in the case of the five senses. And you will, as you will see, it is very straightforward what these drawbacks are. What is the drawback of sensual pleasures, of the five senses? It's when a gentleman or a gentlewoman or a gentle person earns a living by means such as computing, accounting, calculating, farming, trade, raising cattle, archery, government service, or one of the professions. Yeah, whatever profession you're in, that is your by that by which you earn your living. Yeah. But they must face cold and heat, being hurt by the touch of flies, mosquitoes, wind, sun, and reptiles, and risking death from hunger and thirst. This is the drawback of sensual pleasures apparent in this very life, a mass of suffering caused by sensual pleasures, or you could say caused by the five senses. Yeah, this has to do with the five senses again. I would say much better to call it caused by the five senses than caused by sensual pleasures. It's more kind of immediately understandable. So what is the point of this? Well, the point of this is that all of these things are small. This may seem like small things, right? Cold and heat. But we are always complaining about the cold and the heat. Isn't that true? I was complaining the other day. I said, please turn on the aircon. So I was complaining just the other day. Yeah. And sometimes I see some of you, maybe you get too cold when the aircon is too cold. I like very cold aircon because I'm Norwegian. And Norwegians, we like kind of the cold and the ice. But I too sometimes, actually I've been in Australia for so long now, I start to get cold when I, you know, gets too cold. And the heat can be terrible in Australia. If you think it's hot in Malaysia, you haven't been to Australia yet. Much, much hotter in Australia than in Malaysia. Yeah, recently between 35 and 40 degrees, and the sun is like this. Yeah, it's not like kind of humid, it's kind of really dry heat in Australia. Last year we had 1 week. Every day was over 40 degrees for one whole week, yeah? And you think you're going to die at the end of that. You think you really, actually you want to die at the end of all of that. It is so, so painful. So these things are real. They are real problems, right? Cold and heat. And of course, if you have to live a living like this, and especially at that time in India, there was no air con, yeah? You had to be outside. The heat was kind of searing, and you just had to deal with it somehow, huh? But we all know that this is unpleasant. And then you have the idea of all the little insects, right? All the serpents and all of these kind of things. Yeah, do you have mosquitoes here in Malaysia? Yeah? Everywhere in the world, mosquitoes, right? Everywhere is mosquitoes. You can't get away from mosquitoes. And if you have a mosquito at night in your room, can you sleep? This mosquito is buzzing. Bzzz, very hard to sleep, right? And it's kind of stupid, because what can the mosquito do? It can give you a small little bite, and then you can't sleep. It's kind of silly, but somehow it plays with our psychology, and we can't deal with that. It's very interesting. So all of these things are irritants in our life, and sometimes we are so used to it, we don't actually think that it is a problem. Huh? And this is kind of one of those strange things, that anyone who has attains a deep state of samadhi, you will understand after coming out of a state of samadhi how irritating the body is. Yeah, you never even understand it before because you're always there. The body is always here, always irritating you. Pain here, pain there, little kind of, you know, tensions or whatever. And then when you let go of the body, wow, so blissful. And then you come back to the body again. I think, oh no, I don't want to come back to this body again. Yeah. The body is a heap of pain. That's basically the body. And the Buddha actually says that in the suttas. This body is like this precipice. It's like this abyss of pain. There's no end to the pains of the body. And sometimes we're not even aware of that. And so this is the pain that has to do with the five senses. Yeah, it's simple things. But we have to, sometimes we have to reflect and stand back to see that these things actually are problems. The wind, the sun, yeah, the sun is being too hot, reptiles, and you're risking death from hunger and thirst. Okay, I don't know about these days. Have you ever risked death because of hunger and thirst? Because you had to drive to the restaurant? Yeah, yeah, okay, that's true. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. You had to drive to the five-star restaurant. Driving to the five-star restaurant, yeah, that's really risky, yeah. Yeah. That's a good point, yeah. So, it's quite not so common, but I think there's more hunger in the world now than there was recently. Things are getting worse again, more difficult with food security, yeah? So things are kind of going in that direction. And what about you, Venerable? Have you ever risked hunger and thirst as a monastic? Yeah. Never risk that? Okay. So always people there. The Thai people are so generous to monastics, right? So you cannot risk any hunger and thirst. In fact, it's the opposite problem. Too much food, that's the problem, right? If you look downstairs, like, you know, today, there's enough food for 10 monks there. And now, where are the other monks? I can't, they're not there. So it is very beautiful. It's one of those very touching things to be a monastic, is that people are usually very kind to you, and very, very supportive, and very generous. And it's very dangerous as a monastic to take it for granted. But actually, it's a very beautiful thing. Yeah. And if you think about those things in the right way, it actually is very uplifting. Yeah. Because you see the goodness in the world. You see the goodness is there. So always have your eyes open for the goodness in other people. Because it always is around you if you know how to look in the right place. Anyway, back to the sutta. So this is an obvious kind of a problem with the five senses. And please notice that when you have a little bit of success in your meditation practice and your body starts to fade away, notice how delightful that is. Part of that delight, part of that happiness comes precisely because the five senses are fading away. That is why you feel happy and at ease. It's a very large part of it. It may seem bleeding obvious, right? But actually the Buddha has to tell us these things for us to really reflect on these things properly here. Okay, this is a drawback. Yeah. Then comes the second one. That gentleman, that gentlewoman, that gentle person might try hard, strive and make an effort, but fail to make any money. If this happens, they sorrow, wail and lament, beating the breast and falling into confusion, saying, "Oh, my hard work is wasted, my efforts are fruitless." Has that ever happened to you? You work really hard in the company, the boss doesn't see you. Has that ever happened? You feel you put in so much hard effort, no one appreciates what you're doing here. Isn't that always like that? Yeah, not always like that, but sometimes like that. You work really hard and they see someone who's a real scallywag, but they know how to endear themselves to the boss, right? They are kind of this dodgy character. All they do is endearing themselves. They don't actually do any hard work. They get the promotion. They get the raise. But you don't get it. True, isn't it? Life is often like that. Life is often unfair. And sometimes you just have to deal with the unfairness because that is the nature of life. Never expect life to be fair. If you expect life to be fair, you're going to suffer. Guaranteed. So this is the thing here, right? You work really hard, it doesn't pay off. This is what happens. There's no guarantee that your hard work will pay off. This is unfortunate, the nature of the world. And so many people get angry and upset because of these things. This too is a drawback of sensual pleasures apparent in this very life, a mass of suffering caused by sensual pleasure. And of course the problem here, again, and this is the problem with all of the sensual world, is that we share that world with other people. And when we share the world with other people, it means that we are not really the boss in that world. We're not in charge. We rely on what other people do. Yeah, we depend on other people whether we are going to be happy or not. That is one of the important differences between the spiritual life and the worldly life. The worldly life is always shared with others. And we are subject to, we are trapped by how other people treat us and what they do to us. When it comes to the spiritual life, you are in charge. It only has to do with you. It has to do with your conduct. It has to do with your inner life. It has to do with how you think. It has to do with how you still yourself in meditation. Other people have no say in that thing. And this is why the spiritual life is more satisfactory, because you have greater sense of control, if you like. Maybe control is the wrong word, but you have more effect over that life than you have over the life outside. That gentleman, that gentlewoman, that gentle person might try hard, strive and make an effort, and succeed in earning money. So even if you succeed, it's bad, right? This is the next one here. Even if you succeed, there's a problem here. But they experience pain and sadness when they try to protect it, thinking, how can I prevent my wealth from being taken by the rulers or the bandits or consumed by fire, swept away by a flood, or taken by unloved heirs? And even though they do protect it and ward it, rulers or bandits still take it. Fire still consumes it, or flood sweeps it away, or unloved heirs take it away. Yeah? This is true, isn't it? One of the big kind of anxieties of people is to look after their property. Yeah, make sure you lock the door of the apartment, otherwise the burglars are going to come. Do we have enough locks? Is it safe enough? Is anyone going to steal it? Make sure the car is locked. Don't park the car in a dangerous place. Have you got your wallet with you? What's going on? Always concerned about the things that we own, right? I know what it is like. This is kind of the nature of this world. It is like that. And sometimes I'm worried about my computer, so I know exactly the feeling where maybe someone is going to take it, because I have all these valuable things on my computer, like my translation work is there. I'm attached to my translation. So this is how it goes, yeah? It is painful to be worried about our things in the world. Is it painful to be worried about that, trying to protect it, thinking about it, being concerned about it? It is always the same. And even if you try your hardest to look after things, still you are not sure that it actually will work out. And usually what happens if the kings or the taxes get taken, or the bandits rob your apartment, or the fire burns down your house, as it happens in Australia sometimes, what you then think, again, you tend to think the wrong thing. What you think is, what could I have done better to avoid that? That's what you think, yeah? Oh, I should have sprinkler system in my house. I should have cleared the leaves from the gutters of the house. That's why it burned down, yeah? I didn't have enough locks on my apartment. That's why it got burgled. You're learning the wrong thing from what is happening. That is not what you should learn. You shouldn't learn to think that the reason is because you didn't do it right. That's actually the wrong lesson. There may be something to that, but that's only a small part of it, because even if you had more locks, even if you did clear those leaves of your house, still your house would burn down eventually. Still your apartment would eventually get burgled, because that's what burglars do. So the real lesson, instead of trying to find the solution in that realm, is to remember this is the nature of things. You cannot hold on to things. You do your best, but you don't go over the top with anxiety, because you know it is the nature of the world for things to go. Don't have anything expensive in your apartment. That's the best thing, right? Just have four bare walls, then you'll be fine. Sleep on the floor. I'm being silly. I'm just being naughty now. So don't do that, because then you have a miserable life. Make sure you have a nice life. But this is basically the nature of the world, that you cannot hold on to things. And certainly when you die, that starts to become very, very obvious. They sorrow, wail, and lament, beating their breast, falling into confusion. What used to be mine is gone. Yeah? What used to be mine is gone. Now, can you see what the problem is there? The problem is that it was never yours in the first place. That's the problem. You thought it was yours. You forgot that everything you have is actually borrowed goods. It comes into your life and then it disappears. The idea of mine is a delusion. It is an illusion. Nothing is really yours. It comes as it arises, and when time has come to pass away, it will go again. You cannot control these things. And this is why the Buddha has this beautiful idea of the simile of borrowed goods. Understanding things in your life to be borrowed is a far better attitude to have to them. If you don't think of thing as mine, then you will not be surprised when it's gone. It wasn't mine anyway. Okay, it's gone. Fine. No worries. It's true. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for reminding me. That's excellent. Now I shall remember. Borrowed computer. Okay, borrowed. This is what you have fellow monastics, because they dare to tell you straight to your face what the problem is. Excellent. Okay. I don't have a borrowed spouse. That's true. Yeah. Okay. So we have borrowed core monastics instead. That's true. So they take that job. Okay. So this too is a drawback of the five senses apparent in this very life, a mass of suffering caused by sensual pleasures. You will notice here apparent in this very life. That is an important one because the Buddha always divides things up into what you can see immediately, what is kind of you can know for yourself. And then, of course, there are the consequences that come in future lives. That's also part of this. We'll come to that further down. But so far, we're dealing with what is apparent right here and now. The mass of suffering caused by the five senses. Okay, let's do a little bit of meditation. comments or questions by anyone?
Hello, Ajahn.
Hello. kids or not kids?
Yeah, kids.
Yeah, kids.
when faced with unfairness, like in the class, unfairness.
Unfairness in class, okay.
Yeah, you said about working hard and all right. So like my girl, she did her part lah in class, but she was not given that recognition. So how do I guide them? I told her if you have the expectation, you'll always be disappointed.
Yeah.
So I cannot tell her not to have, because kids are kids.
Yeah.
Adults also, we do have expectations. So how do we balance?
Okay, well, I think you balance by, first of all, just let them know that the world is unfair. Yeah, do not expect the world to be fair, because it isn't fair. The fairness doesn't exist. It's very random. But what you can tell her is that in the long run, it will be recognized. Yeah. In the short run, there will be times when it's not recognized. But if she keeps on doing the right thing in the long run, overall, it will be recognized. Because usually good work is recognized, but not always. And so you just have to tell her that, okay, keep on going, and eventually it will be okay. Maybe this particular teacher is no good. The next year you have a different teacher, it will be different, for example. Yeah, or whatever it is. So something like that, and the other thing I think that is important is to also, again, this is, you know, one of the things that we're trying to do here. We're trying to shift the attention away from the external world to the inner world. And in the inner life, and everything good you do is always recognized, because you recognize it. So if you live more, instead of living for recognition by external people, which is always going to be uncertain, you do something which you know yourself you can recognize. That is, in other words, to live with kindness, to live with care, to live with compassion. You will always gain the benefit from that, regardless. Because she will know, you will know when you are kind, and you will feel good about yourself as a consequence. That recognition will always be there. It's difficult with kids because they're still very young, and it's hard for them to see these things, but you can sow the little seeds, you know, and then over time it will kind of come, and eventually they will have some success with these kind of things, hopefully. So, and see what happens. In one way, it's interesting with children and that age, you know, 13 or whatever it is. On the one hand, they can be very smart and sharp. Like yesterday, the question was quite a sharp question. Yeah, why should I say thank you when I don't feel gratitude? You know, on the one hand, they can be very intelligent, but on the other hand, they're also still very immature at the same time. They have this double-edged sword. You know the right answer, but sometimes it can be hard to tell them the right answer because they use their sharp mind to circumvent the right answer. And that makes life difficult. Yeah.
Based on your reply yesterday, I brought it back to her.
Mm.
She used the salt in the lake simile. Because I said, Ajahn said you have to be polite.
Mm.
So I asked her, Ajahn said you don't need to have gratitude in saying thank you.
Yeah.
But she said the whole point of thank you is because I feel grateful. So I asked her, in the whole time with that teacher, wasn't there one act of goodness warrants a thank you?
Yeah.
Then she used that simile. Mommy is like the salt in the lake. It's not enough one act, one good act, to cover all the other ugly acts.
Yeah.
So I say I'll ask Ajahn.
Well, we should have gratitude for even the smallest things in the world. It's good to have gratitude for even the small things. I remember the Venerable Sariputta. There's a story in the Vinaya Pitaka about a man who wanted to become a monk. And then the Buddha asks the monks, well, should we ordain this man or not? He was a Brahmin. And all the monks, nah, we shouldn't ordain him. He's very stingy. He's a bad person. And then they asked the Venerable Sariputta, and said, oh, I remember one occasion. He put some food in my alms bowl. And then the Buddha praised him. That is what the people who have gratitude do. They remember one single occasion, huh? Yeah, because it is so beautiful. So remember the good qualities in people. When you remember, even if it's only one occasion, huh? That's good enough. Huh? Yeah, because that is a beautiful way of looking at other people, rejoicing in their good qualities. So that is always has to be like that. And the other thing to remind your daughter is that it's very difficult to know other people. Huh? We don't really know them. All we see is we see the person filtered through our own perception. She sees that teacher in one way, someone else may see the teacher in a different way. Yeah, we don't actually know the person. So when you see something good, always rejoice in that, hold on to that, because it is something beautiful to hold on to into the in the world. And so, yeah, I mean, she's young. You have to allow her to be a bit rebellious. Young people want to be rebellious. Don't try too hard to convince her otherwise. Yeah, shrug your shoulders and say whatever. Yeah, just it's okay. Yeah, because sometimes they will just keep on arguing until you get exhausted, right? And then it's gonna be it's gonna be hopeless anyway.
And Ajahn will be exhausted too. With the questions.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
Ajahn, yeah, I like the way you said that, just let the child be rebellious. I would like to, I'm very touched that this sister is so committed to be a good mother and a good parent.
It's nice, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And but I would like to also mention that perhaps you're trying a bit too hard, sister. I think you are a very good parent already, just be good enough. Another thing I would like to highlight is probably to be a parenting skill. We can't learn parenting skill all from Buddhism. There are very practical parenting skills that you can look at, like how to deal with your child's emotion. You know, if the child come back very upset and say that I say thank you and people don't appreciate it, you may want to say that oh, just awful, right? You know, you just acknowledge that she feels awful. Just so that's compassion. And I think yesterday somebody mentioned about mindful kids, mindful teen. I hope BGF will start. I actually created the program with Sister May and Mei Mian on mindful teen. Mm. It deals a lot with emotion. Of course, it's based on mindfulness. And also there's mindful parenting too that Sister May is doing. So I hope it can kind of help all these parents who really want to do good. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah.
Thank you.
Great. That's good. So there you are. Yeah. So yeah, it's true. Sometimes it's better to ask someone else who is a parent rather than a monk who has no idea. So you know, that's kind of a... That's always useful. So yeah. Okay. Yes, please, Bobby.
Yeah, Diachan. Diachan, of all the five sensual desires, what would be the major one that most people need to encounter? Because, like I understand, a lot of monastics disrobe because of a woman attraction to opposite. So I guess it's the same for lay people.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is not, I mean, you're talking about sex and that kind of thing, obviously, but it's not that the sexuality is bad. You know, Buddhism doesn't have that kind of idea that sexuality is bad. This is very much a Christian kind of thing, comes with Christianity. Buddhism doesn't have that kind of moralizing. But what I would say, that it's not like one particular sensual pleasure that is kind of worse. I mean, sexuality is bad because often the craving can be very strong and that can be very, very agitated and that sort of thing. That is kind of the downside. But what really is bad is not that. But what is bad is when you become unkind because in your pursuit of sensual pleasures. So I would say that the critical thing is to be kind. And if you can be kind at all times... That is, if a certain sensual pleasure stops you from being kind, yeah? For example, you are so keen on your career, you don't care if you hurt other people in the pursuit of your career, or you are so keen on whatever that you kind of have extramarital affairs and these kind of things. Yeah? If you break your precepts in the pursuit of sensual pleasures, that is a problem. So I would say, just be kind. And if you are kind consistently all the time, that will put a bound on the sensual pleasures you can enjoy here. Yeah, that will put a natural bound on it. And that bound is good enough for most people. So that's what I would say. But there's no need to kind of cut out any particular sensual pleasures in ordinary life.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, shall we? Let's carry on a little bit.